Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston, on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. We've actually been updating our website for once, too, so that's kind of nice. The podcast page is up to date, at least it was 10 minutes ago. Anyway, co-hosting with me this evening, Mr. Andy Ulrich and Matt the Minion. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Fine, Andy. I've been thoroughly entertained for the last hour.
That's good. That's good. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
So I don't really know what's happening. Apparently, everyone other than Andy is feeling rather inept at Ballistic Radio HQ right now. We've managed to forget headphones. Our producer just scared the ever-loving crap out of one of the other producers. It was pretty amusing, actually. So didn't get our tonight's guest on the line until about 20 seconds ago. So anyway, hopefully it should be a good show. Tonight we're going to be joined again by Stephen the Yeti Fisher. Big giant bear of a man. I guess Yeti would be more accurate since that's what he goes by. Anyway, we're going to be talking about weapon-mounted lights, low-light target ID, and just in general what happens in the dark and why it's important to maybe think about it beforehand. And wow, my phrasing was sort of poor there.
That's never happened before.
No, never at all. Fair warning to everyone, too. I'm feeling a little under the weather. I don't think I'm dying tonight, which was sort of in question yesterday. I for sure thought I was having a heart attack in the middle of the day. But I'm feeling better. I'm happy. Should be good. Wow. I'm sorry. I'll just stop.
That was a terrible British accent.
I don't do British accents. I can do hick okay. Sort of. I'm not going to right now, though, because there's people listening, but I can do it.
Some people have called me a hick, so.
Are you offended?
I'm insulted by that.
I've been insulting a lot of people.
I know that.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
We're not going to get into that on the air, but the Facebook page is really something to follow if you want to see me upset other people and or make fun of other people.
People skills.
Yeah, I don't have those. Anyway, just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. Though I'm sure they're much more personable than I am. Thank you, Colt. Anyway, let's get Stephen on the line. This will be fun. So, joining us, Mr. Stephen Fisher. Steve, are you there?
What is going on?
Not much. I'm just being my usual goofy self, I guess. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm absolutely exhausted. I just walked off the range about 25 minutes ago. We've been teaching for about the past week straight, so it's... Yeah, you're lucky I'm here.
I know. Well, it was funny. I sent you that text message earlier today, and you're like, what? I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, you were actually up at Alliance, Ohio, the Alliance Police Training Center, which is an excellent facility. I really suggest everyone check it out. You were AIing at the Pat Rogers Shoot House class again, and then you were teaching your own low-level vehicle course, or low-light vehicle course, right?
Wow, I'm glad you think so highly of me. Yeah, no, we were actually teaching a low-light vehicle course.
With, right.
Really, really good program.
Yeah, so. It's at least a mid-level course, Steve. I mean, I didn't mean to say low-level. And certainly,
no, that's okay, that's fine.
Better than anything I could put out. I can't even teach anyone to tie their shoes. I mean, that's why I wear flip-flops. Little-known fact. So,
not...
Wow. Anyway, and I'm sorry to all the listeners that are just sort of shaking their head right now, and I'm sorry to be wasting your time too, Steve.
I'm just going home right now and going to bed and start drinking. It's okay.
Well, there you go. So for those that don't know or didn't catch the last episode, you mind going over your background just a little bit, and then we'll hopefully go to the break and I can compose myself and say something semi-intelligent.
No, that's awesome. Most notably, I spent the last three and a half odd years with Magpul Dynamics as one of the primary instructors. Currently a reserve officer with a agency, with a sheriff's department. And prior to that, I had service with another sheriff's department in Michigan for about 15 years.
Okay. Yes. So, and you teach all sorts of stuff from pistol stuff to rifle stuff to... shotgun stuff, which I really need to come and take one of those because I'm terrible with a shotgun. So you sort of run the gamut of instruction, right?
Correct. Yeah, we offer a wide range and variety of classes. So
okay. So I guess where I want to start, and the platform doesn't necessarily matter as much when we're talking about nighttime, though I guess it does in a few ways. But what I'm curious about, and one of the conversations that we had when I was up at the Alliance Police Training Center, was how people sort of fall apart in the dark. We've got about 2.5 minutes left. Do you want to briefly delve into that, and then we'll get into more detail next segment?
Sure. You know, the bottom line is, one, people don't train enough in the dark. Two, they don't understand the dark, and they don't understand their lights. And, you know, when a dark monster shows up, honestly, people become IQ stupid at that point.
Right.
The IQ levels drop immensely because people just don't do it enough. And unfortunately, it's mainly due to a lack of facilities that allow nighttime low-light shooting. And that's the biggest factor in why it's a hard thing for people to really grasp and understand.
Do you think that the skill level required to operate well at night is really that much higher than it is to operate well during the day, or is it just a matter of getting to practice it?
Exactly. It's like any other skill set that we use with firearms is basically that, repetitions and proper repetitions and training in it. And it's a very hard thing for people, and we all need it because we just don't get enough of it, and we have to continually practice it, as well as some of the equipment that goes along with it, which I'm sure we'll dive into a little bit deeper. But it really comes down to the repetitions and the training that people are getting in it.
Right. And one of the things that I assume you're talking about, I know that one of the really popular things to discuss when we're talking about weapon-mounted lights is how many lumens do they put out, how bright are they? And I'll tell you, my opinion has changed slightly, but you tend to see two camps where, you know, 200 lumens is enough versus as many as I can get. If I can melt the face off of someone with my flashlight, that's what I want. We got about 50 seconds left. Where do you fall on that?
The light has to be as capable as the gun that it is on and as your capabilities as a shooter.
Okay. So pretty much if you've got a 100, 150, 200-yard gun, then you need a light that'll reach out that far?
Correct.
Okay.
For a lot of reasons, which we'll get into. So.
All right. And that was just sort of something interesting, because I was a fan of the Surefire Mini Scout, which is a 200-lumen light. They got a 300-lumen coming out, and, you know, I took a 500-lumen light up to the class, and honestly, I was kind of wishing I had more than that even. But like you said, we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get back. We're going to be discussing weapon-mounted lights and also just gun setups in general with Stephen Fisher. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. And I swear to God, they're going to have pricing up on their website at some point if Bill ever gets around to it. Now, the Minion can attest to the fact that I did hound him about that last week. Isn't that right, Matt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. So we're working on it. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Walther and the new PPX. Anyway, this evening we are joined by Steve Fisher, the Yeti, talking about weapon-mounted lights and how things fall apart in the dark. Anyway, Steve, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. There's always that pause when I ask someone that, and I've got like this brief moment of panic. And I haven't hung up on anyone in a while, and I mention it almost every show, but still.
Almost every show?
Every show.
Yeah,
that's
go.
Right. It's just a reminder to myself. So anyway, we were talking about, you need to have a weapon-mounted light that is as capable as the gun that it's on, as well as the shooter, their abilities. Do you mind delving into that a little bit further and talk about why you mean that or what?
Let's look at it from a couple of perspectives. I mean, if we look at, say, the average homeowner who's going to use either a pistol, carbine, or shotgun, you know, pick one. We'll talk about it. Versus, say, a rural/urban law enforcement officer using a patrol rifle specifically. and or handgun, and what some of their distances could be based on scenarios and things that have actually happened just outside of theory and training environments. We saw recently in the past, in the past shoot house class, as well as the one you were in, that, the use of the light and the shooter's ability not only to shoot but to process information quickly and accurately to allow them to make decisions is based upon our ability to see.
Right.
There's no two ways about that. And if you're unable to positively 100% identify from zero to whatever distance, then you are ineffective.
Now, you hear all sorts of people that talk about, well, my house is never completely 100% pitch black, so that's why I don't have a light on my home defense gun. I would point out that there's all sorts of dead people that did not need to be dead, including family members of shooters, of people that didn't have lights on their guns. Why do you think that exists as a theory?
People talk about that all the time. Well, I have lights here. I have a night light. I have this light on over my kitchen. So whatever the case may be, there's always, to the most part, some sort of ambient lighting source in a house. When you think about your own, is the house ever absolutely totally pitch black? Is there always some kind of light on somewhere, be it a night light for the children in one room, if there's kids involved, or a guest in the house who may be unfamiliar with the residence, you leave a night light on? Any number of what-if situations that are actually relevant and do occur. So, we take those into consideration. Yes, there's ambient lighting, but the problem still exists that you wake up from a dead sleep at 3 a.m. in your tactical underoos, and there you are, standing there with your Wonder Blaster 6000, be it a handgun or shotgun, carbine, totally irrelevant what it is, and you're jostled awake by whatever that noise may be, the dog, glass breaking, whatever sounds people like to use for analogies on this, you still need to be able to positively identify those noises, where they're coming from, and what they are. People always throw out this, well, yeah, I know my own house. I've lived in it for 15, 20 years, da-da-da-da. The problem isn't knowing your own house. The problem is they occupy space already that you do not own.
Right.
They are there. They are in your home. But where? They already own that part of the world.
Right.
Even though it's yours and you know it, but it's theirs now because you have no clue where they are at.
Well, it seems like the other thing, too, is that for most people, when they think about a home break-in or, a home self-defense situation, they've got this clear-cut idea in mind that if someone's in their house, then they're going to shoot whoever that someone is. And I've always found that idea to be a little bit narrow in scope, and especially after I started talking with Craig Douglas about that sort of thing, who is excellent at providing all sorts of scenarios where someone's in your house, doesn't need to be in your house, but also does not deserve to get shot.
Correct.
So
Craig is an absolute wizard on that stuff. He's somebody I consider a buddy. He's an absolute fantastic instructor and definitely gets people thinking, and I highly recommend his courses to everybody out there.
Oh, definitely. I was actually just talking with Craig the other day, and you came up, and he had nothing but nice things to say about you, too. Also, congratulations to the new Mr. and Mrs. Craig Douglas. Craig actually just got married on Saturday. So
yes, he did.
I was sad that I missed that. It was like a tactical wedding, which I had never seen before. But
Oh, it makes my head hurt, that word.
Well,
tactical light.
Still, I mean, I see a photo and it's like Tom Givens and Paul Sharp and Claude Werner, and I'm like, wow, I'm sad that I didn't get invited. I'm not going to pretend like I did, and B, that I wasn't there. But anyway, moving forward, I'm not a cool kid at all. So,
no, dude.
Don't
no,
go there. Just stop.
I almost did. I almost went there. I was so close.
You could. I mean, I'm pretty upfront about my non-cool kid status, but that's why I'm likable. So, except
that's
when
very
I'm not.
True.
Yes. Anyway, moving forward with the point of the show. So, if we acknowledge that not everyone that's in our house deserves to get shot, and that
right.
sort of thinking is really bad, and that, just because it's a legal shoot does not mean it's something you're going to be able to live with later on. For instance, if you kill your drunk suffering from Alzheimer's, retired police officer or whatever, you know, that got confused, you might feel bad about that. So once we acknowledge that and we've come up with the idea that, okay, we really need to positively identify people, what's the next thing to think about? I mean, as far as selection of a light.
Well, it's really a concern based on, A, does the gun that you're choosing to use have some sort of interface that will allow you to attach the light to the gun? All right. Obviously, if it's an M4, there is 1.5 million dedicated light mount systems based off Picatinny rail, front sight base, you know, that will take a light. So we look for something that has some sort of interface that will determine what kind of light we start to use on the gun. Handguns, we start looking at pistols, revolvers, all that kind of good things. You know, some people still choose to use a revolver. Nothing wrong with it. Great pistol. Been killing people since the dawn of man and since they've invented the gun.
Yeah.
You know, some of them do not have an option for rail. So then we're into handheld light selection.
Right.
So a lot of variables fall into play here. For me personally, my personal choice is weapon-mounted lights and often in conjunction a handheld light.
And out of curiosity, and I sort of fall into that too, but why is that? What's your reasoning there?
One, not every solution is a shoot solution. It may be an identifying solution, period, at that point. Everything needs to be identified before it can be shot. Is it more than acceptable to point a gun at somebody that is an unknown in your house and using a light to identify them? I would absolutely, positively, 100% say yes, it is. And this is, I know, oh my God, you're talking about pointing a gun at somebody. The horror, not everybody that you point a weapon at needs to be shot.
Right.
We get that. This is where processing of information comes into play. And now the fact comes into play of what if I have to manipulate windows, doors, control my children, get down to the bedroom, pull the kids back in the room, whatever that may be, I may need that gun to have a light attached to it, with operation capability of being used with one hand, to still positively identify and or engage that bump in the night.
Right, right.
And now, but
I was going to say, that sort of, and I'm sure we'll get into actual firearm selection a little bit later on, but that sort of makes a case for a pistol with a weapon-mounted light as your primary, if for whatever reason you're clearing and or searching your dwelling, as maybe the smart choice.
Personal, totally personal. Yep, a handgun is more portable.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to maintain control of. It's easier to manipulate with malfunctions, anything that may crop up one-handed. But it is the one tool that is harder for most people to shoot one-handed because they also do not practice one-handed.
Right.
I should take that back. It's easy to shoot one-handed. It's very easy to press the trigger with one hand. But for most people, they do not practice enough one-handed operations, including use of the light and everything else that goes along with it outside of their own, for what I'm really looking for, their square range mentality of shooting the gun, thinking that they are more than capable of using it one-handed to get effective hits.
Right.
Under stress.
Right.
That's not always the case. We see this.
And it seems like, once again, people sort of tend to overestimate not only their own abilities, but the positive aspects of whatever situation they find themselves in. It seems like when people think of a bad day, they think of a really sunny bad day.
Yes, they do. And now, you know, people will freak out because we talk about, oh my God, pointing a gun at somebody with a weapons light. Okay, got it. Now we start getting into handheld lights with that wheel gun or that semi-auto pistol. And if you look at most of the quote-unquote modern techniques on use of the light with a pistol or a wheel gun or whatever, where is it indexed? With the gun pointed towards the bad noise.
Right, right.
Versus having a handheld light, which I highly recommend. You know, you can independently search, identify, and then engage with that pistol.
Yeah.
So there's multiple ways of doing it. There's no absolute one perfect way to skin a cat, so to speak.
Right.
But you have to be cognizant of all those factors. Find out what one works best for you. What is the best application of those tools for you? But then just drive on and forget about it. It's stupid and it's senseless.
Right. Well, and it seems like, you know, the entire industry is built around, and obviously I'm a big part of that because that's my job every week, is to talk about things like this, but the industry is built around the constant discussion of equipment or scenarios or tactics, when in a lot of situations it seems like the answer is, well, just practice more.
Getting proper practice,
yeah,
obviously is key. You know, going to the range, shooting, practicing is great, but actually getting into some sort of home defense, you know, shoot house type class, and it's not really a shoot house. It's more of a problem-solving house.
Yeah. And
you just have the ability to shoot inside of it.
Right. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. We actually ran up to the break. Right now we're talking with Stephen Fisher. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. Disposable heroes for Matt Hott, who is H-A-U-G-H-T, not H-O-T. So I'm sure he's dead sexy. Who was just talking about this song earlier today on Facebook. Anyway, I'm going to stop now. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms parts and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium ARs. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for Sig parts and accessories. Right now we are talking with Steve Fisher about all sorts of things related to the Night Monster and when it comes out to play, how people get stupid. If you would like a chance to win a Next Level Training SIRT training pistol, you can call us at 1-800-823-8255. We may take a call or two at the end of the show. If we take your call, you will be automatically entered into a drawing to win that pistol at the end of the month or beginning of next month or the middle of next month, really depending on whatever I feel like at any given time. But you will be entered for a contest to win a free cert training pistol. Anyway, enough of me blabbing. Let's get back to Steve Fisher. Steve, how's it going?
I'm half asleep right now.
Okay. I'm not entertaining you on the introductions here?
No. There's too many commercials. I want to talk more.
Commercials. I keep being told that the show needs to be longer, and I just don't think people realize that I would run out of things to say.
You wouldn't. You wouldn't. I've heard you talk. No, you wouldn't.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate that vote of confidence. It's funny. You can tell the people that have met me in person because they really know things about my personality that are not readily apparent on the show.
It's very true. Very true.
Well, I'm using my co-host this evening as well.
I'm gonna write a book someday.
Are you?
Yeah.
The Art of Tactical Flip-Flops? The Tao of John Johnston?
I'll come up with something wittier than that, though.
Okay. Dynamic Tactical Flip-Flops? No, I think Magpul would get mad.
I think it should be something like The Art of You Have Way Too Much Tactical Cool Guy Gear for Being a Radio Guy.
That's true.
It's going to be, where's my blanking monster drink?
I can't drink it anymore. Jeff Gonzalez ruined it for me. And I will hate Jeff forever for ruining Monster Energy drinks for me and for turning me on to 6.8 SPC. Two things that I didn't really need to have happen. But anyway, moving forward, we were talking about selecting a weapon-mounted light and also firearm selection for home defense and in general fighting in the dark. Now, assuming night vision is not an option, and that's a completely different show that I'm not going to talk about, let's just kind of think of a solid answer. For a pistol, where do you think the lumen range needs to be? And then for a long gun, where do you think it needs to be?
My personal choice for a pistol is a 500 lumen, the Surefire Ultra, the X300 Ultra.
Right.
That's my personal carry gun and all my personal carry guns. That's what I use. I would say that the average person could probably get away with in their home, according to what people say, would be 100 to 150 lumen light.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a tendency to somewhat agree with that, as that being the bare bones minimum for optimal use in an average residential home.
Okay.
So,
do you think that people are overlooking the benefits of having a lot of spill and or splash light coming off of the weapon light?
Yeah, I absolutely think so, because, again, it comes back to people not understanding how to use the light or read the light. And a lot of that comes down to that they just don't do it enough, like, again, like we've talked about. But the light does a lot of things for us. The more spill it has, obviously, the more we see of the room or the shapes inside of the room or the objects that are inside that room.
Okay.
The light should have a really good central, deep-throwing, center-beamed hotspot with a great spill, but it's the intermediate distance of the light that people usually don't understand how to read. And personally, we see this a lot where, you know, in that 0 to 5 yard range from in front of the gun, it's great. From that, you know, 25 to say 40 yard range, it's really awesome because of its spill. But somewhere in the middle ground, or from its throw, I'm sorry, and in the spill, somewhere in the middle is where things start to fall apart with a lot of inferior lights.
Yeah.
They just don't have a good concentric throw all the way out.
Okay. So I guess working off of that a little bit and going to the long gun side of things, I mean, mm-hmm. 500 at a minimum, more than that, less than that, depend on whether or not it's a shotgun or a rifle.
What? I run 500 lumens is a bare bone minimum on my carbines. Some of my 308 carbines, I run 1,000 lumen.
Mm-hmm.
The Surefire, the PX3, the 1,000 lumen Fury, I have a tendency to run those on most of my longer range guns.
Right.
Even some of my standard carbines, you know, I'll still run 1,000 lumen light, especially because I run a lot of magnified optics, 1-4, 1-6 glass.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, positive threat identification at distance under white light.
Right. Right. And
as for shotgun, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, really, you go ahead. You were going to ask me something.
I was, but then I forgot that shotguns existed, and I want to hear what you have to say about that before I answer or ask my question. So,
as far as shotguns go, the shotgun should have an integrated system, if possible. The Surefire integrated weapons forend for the, you know, 870 Mossbergs are absolutely outstanding. One of the tricks that I do, and that a lot of guys I know in the industry as well do, is that we will take the old incandescent bodies out, the old 6P style light heads, and we will replace those with a 500 lumen Fury light mm-hmm. in that body and run it off the 3 batteries to make it operational instead of 2. And what it does, it kicks that light up in the circuitry, allowing that light to be used in about the 600 lumen range.
Right, right.
And it's absolutely amazing.
Okay. And see, it's funny, too, because I said that I forgot shotguns exist. And I know shotguns are an excellent tool for a lot of situations. It's funny how much I don't even really think of their existence outside of animal control just because they don't fit into anything that I need. And that's not knocking the platform. It's just kind of one of my little personality flaws, I guess. My question was going to be something along the lines of, and you mentioned use a magnified optic, and I actually don't own any magnified optics at all except an ACOG that Trigicon sent me to test out. Just because for around here, the longest rifle shot I can realistically think of is about 150, 200 yards. For a lot of people, that seems like a long shot, but do you think that's something else that people don't consider is like how long a self-defense shooting can occur at?
Well, define self-defense shooting at long distance. I mean, where do you really break that down in? Are you in the Walmart parking lot at 3 o'clock in the morning and there's a dude standing there in the front door with a rifle working over the parking lot? Are we talking in our home? Because obviously, if, hey, I'm pulling into the Walmart parking lot and, you know, whoever's driving the car and they're in there with their kids or whatever the situation may be, and there's a dude there shooting, you should probably use your situational awareness and either A, run the dude over, or B, drive out of there.
Right, right. Well, let's... I was going to say, let's assume for whatever reason we find ourselves in gun-solving mode, and we got about a minute left.
Okay.
Do you think that long range instances are overlooked or not talked about enough?
They aren't, because most average, you know, good citizen self defense shootings don't occur at longer distances.
Yeah.
And by longer distances, I mean past 50 yards, 25 yards. You know, a lot of those things are often overlooked. In the law enforcement setting, you know, quote unquote, that term again, active shooter. A situation going on inside a school, long hallways, Walmart, those types of buildings. you have a considerable distance to engage, but you still need positive identification.
Right.
So that kind of lends itself to magnified optics as well as a really bright light. In that case, 1,000 lumen lights, 500 lumen lights, that is the only way to go. And people often forget that the lights, as you use them, the batteries drain. The lights, the lumens that are projected from the light, also have a tendency to get absorbed by atmospheric conditions, rain, pollen, snow, dust, dirt, carbon coming off the gun as rounds are being fired,
right,
creating smoke based on, you know, temperature changes. All those things come into play, and now you can consider that your lumens are usable lumens. Are cut almost by 50 to 60% at that point.
Right, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. We actually have to get to the break again, and I'm sorry, Steve. Right now we're talking with Stephen Fisher. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. Visit them online, blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by the Polypalooza 2 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 16th and 17th. Wow, I'm lisping terribly. At the Raven Concealment Systems facility in Northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. All skill levels. If you've never gone to a class before, this is a great place to start. For more information, click the Polypalooza 2 tab on ballisticradio.com. Registration is only $250, and all of the money is going to benefit the Paul Gomez Children's Trust. Remember, click the Polypalooza tab on the ballisticradio.com homepage for more information and save the date, August 16th and 17th. I know I'm going to be there, and the Minion's going to be there, and I even think my dad's going to be there. Andy, am I going to convince you to go up there or not?
I will be going to Alaska that week.
Oh, that sounds better than
so
the Polypalooza.
Maybe, you know, you can report me being eaten by a bear or something.
Yeah, that's true. Well, if you have the opportunity to go to Alaska, I'd say skip the conference and go to Alaska. But otherwise, you should be up there getting some training going on. Anyway, back to Stephen Fisher. Steve, are you still there?
Oh, yes.
Excellent. So we were discussing the distances at which self-defense shootings occur at, and honestly, you're kind of correct. I think that something that is oftentimes overlooked is that for most people, long range to them is anything past 10 yards, which I think I know your opinion on that, but you want to discuss that briefly?
If you're living inside that 0 to 10-yard bubble, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Would you like to expand on that just slightly?
Yeah. If you are absolutely incapable of drawing a handgun and delivering effective hits inside the average 8-inch circle out to 25 yards, then you're doing the wrong practice. We understand that people, you know, when bad things occur in the dark, that it's up close and personal for the bad guy, quote unquote, or bad guys to get what they need from you.
Right.
You know, money, valuables, your life, all those things. And every solution is not necessarily a gun solution immediately there as well either. Taking a page from Fred Douglas, you know, we may have to go to hands. But people often forget the, again, their daily lives, where they live, you know, the restaurant that you're sitting down having dinner in tonight. You know, we were just having dinner with the guys after class. You know, they locked us away in this back room. And,
did you go to
you
Sheets
know, honestly,
again?
No more Sheets runs, dude. That's woo, yeah. We're actually at the Roadhouse again, having steaks, if you call it that. But I mean, honestly, from the back room where we are at the front door, it's a 35-yard shot. You know, 40 yards realistically.
Right.
You know, when you take a look at the average grocery aisle in the United States, the perpendicular, yeah, the aisle that goes up and down where everything's at that you want, that's on the interior perimeter of the store.
Yeah.
It's roughly 27 to almost 30 yards.
Yeah. Easily.
So a lot of people skip those things and they fail to see that in their own training, how relevant it really is, because they don't take into those considerations. They mainly focus on, hey, what makes them feel good, and that's working up close and personal with the gun and giving them a very false sense of hope and security.
Yeah. Well, and there's actually some malls around here, too. Kenwood Mall, and I know you guys have both been in there. There's some 100-yard shots in there.
Oh, easily. Down the center.
Easy. Plus.
Yeah. So, and I'm not saying that that's something that we need to dedicate all our training to, and I think the important part that people miss is that you dedicate a percentage of your training to different skills that most fit your situation and all that, but I certainly don't think it's something we should overlook either, you know?
No, not at all.
So, as far as moving back to the operating at night and using weapon-mounted light effectively and all that, do you mind discussing painting the room and how that works versus just flipping the light around trying to spot stuff?
Most people, when they use a light, they kind of swing it around like a magic wand. Mm-hmm. It's like they want that light to do everything for them without the understanding of that they control the flow of the light. And basically, if you take a look at it from a perspective of looking at a wall that you would paint, and you work from corner to corner, and if you skip the brush across the wall or try to use a brush, you get very weak coverage.
Right.
You don't get a full, smooth, even flow of the room. So then you take a big roller, you get that paint roller in there, and you run that thing across the wall from corner to corner, and you get broader, wider coverage.
Right.
And the issue is that people try to process things too quickly by trying to see too fast. They kind of get in the habit of throwing the gun in one spot, throwing the gun to another spot, maybe in the middle, and then they miss all the in-between grounds instead of smoothly, fluidly putting the light, you know, within eye level of where they should be looking, and just sweeping that light in a slow motion, an efficient motion, from corner to corner of the room.
Right.
Now, this also applies to hallways, because people have a tendency to look to X point. They don't look all the way down to the deepest, darkest holes and shadows of those halls. And they may even get sucked into call it a close encounter, where there's somebody 10 yards down the hall, where they may have to engage. Okay, yep, we take it for what it is. We put the light up, we shoot them, they fall down because gravity dictates that, and that's more science. It's right. Been around forever. So
magnets, after that occurred, how do they work?
amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And then you still need to look deep, because now you are in basically a container, a confined area that is linear, looking straight down it, or do you get past fixated on that person that you just problem solved, instead of looking deep down that approach where, hey, there is a potential because it's a dark hole and it will hide somebody.
Right.
They need to look beyond just the initial problem, assess that situation, and keep taking it in layers all the way down to the end of that hall or room.
Okay. Do you mind talking about fixating on a problem and discussing maybe how we overcome that? Because I've actually had some real-world incidents where I've had two or three now that obviously did not involve anything that required going to court afterwards, but I certainly could see becoming task fixated or problem fixated a lot easier in the first one compared to the last one that I found myself in. How do we train around that, or is that just something that comes as we get more experience?
It's kind of twofold. You know, obviously doing some specific exercises in the square range, which I hate to really get into, but definitely, you know, the search and assess or break and assess is, you know, breaking your head out of the optic, out of the sights on your gun, and looking. Basically, you're just looking. And what are we looking for? You get the same answer in class. More bad guys. Well, yeah, got it. Great. You're looking for some more bad people. But what else am I looking for? Is I'm looking for witnesses. I'm looking for people coming in that may help. I'm looking for someplace else I would rather be, a position of advantage that would allow me to still see what is going on around me, be it if I'm actively involved or not at that point. So we're always kind of assessing and looking for something else or somewhere else to be. And the thing that kind of draws us to that is color, contrast, and movement.
Right.
So those things are key indicators, and probably loud noises of gunfire, maybe, and muzzle flashes that tell us something bad is happening at that point.
Yeah, I guess.
But to really break that habit, I mean, yep, it can start in the square range, but people need to understand during training what they're really looking for or looking at, instead of just doing a range kata drill.
Yeah.
That is almost actually positively, I'll beat myself there, garbage.
Yeah.
Versus doing it under UTM with, you know, UTM or simunition training rounds. And, you know, until we can get a ballistic red man suit to actually shoot real bullets at each other, the UTM stuff and sims are about as close as we will ever get, other than being actively engaged in a shooting or gunfight.
Right.
So that is one of the best ways that I have seen to really break people of that is to get them into actual training scenarios using the simunition marking rounds or airsoft or paintball, whatever you choose.
Just force on force.
More realistic. Exactly. Correct. 100% force on force training. So.
Yeah. Well, we got about a minute and a half left, maybe a minute left. Why don't you talk about Sentinel Concepts a little bit and where people can find you and if they want to go take your class, where they can do that at?
You know, Facebook, Sentinel Concepts. From that point, the website, sentinelconcepts@gmail.com. And, you know, we just wrapped up low-light vehicle CQB here at the Alliance Training Police Training Facility.
Yeah.
It's great to be back. And, you know, the guys here are great. And then after that, you know, we've got some shotgun classes coming up in the Ohio area and West Virginia in August. We've got a few more law enforcement-only classes that are going on in between A and B.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's a fun ride right now, man. We're having a great time.
Yeah, no, and it's definitely something that I wish I'd gotten to make it up this weekend, but it just didn't work out. Also, too, looks like you're doing an Essential Carbine September 5th and 7th up the Alliance, Ohio range as well. I'll post a link to your website.
That is correct.
So, Steve, I appreciate you taking the time out after a long day and long week of training to talk to me. So, hope you enjoyed it.
Always a pleasure, John. Always a pleasure.
All right, man. Hey, take it easy. Be safe.
All right, brother. You too.
So, next week, I was originally going to do self-defense on a budget, but it's looking like Matt and Andy are both not going to be here.
We hate you.
Yeah, well, everyone does. And as much as I would like to talk to myself and just callers for 42 minutes, that probably wouldn't be the best idea. So, we'll figure something out, and I'll post it on the Facebook page. Anyway, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone, and as always, be safe and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m.